Power's back on. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, December 14th, 2021. Delayed by 45 minutes, nearly an hour. I'm Pat Contra. That's Ian Ferguson.
Are we recording?
We are recording.
Okay, good. Just making sure.
On the show today, we'll be talking about a review of the Analog Pocket. Oh,
that's right.
We'll be talking about NFTs invading gaming. We'll also be discussing other hoodaddies. And the fact that my outdoor couch might be ruined because the cover got blown off with the 35-40 mile an hour gusts of wind. And I yelled at the top of my lungs, fuck, in the middle of the neighborhood, but I don't care.
It's fine.
We talked about Ian watched Heat.
So good.
We recorded in the den on the cell phone because the power was out. But go to patreon.com/CU podcast. We hear us discuss Michael Mann and the great crime drama from 95 Heat.
Yeah.
Right there. Did you do anything else this weekend, Ian?
My weekend was pretty busy with work, but Vani decided that she wanted to become a pro Halo player this weekend. So
okay.
We'll see how that works out for her. I don't think, maybe not pro, but she, it was funny because she never like has really any interest in that sort of stuff, but she was watching, she was doing work in the living room, cataloging things, and, I was playing some multiplayer and she kept looking up and finally she just puts everything down and she's like really into it. And then she grabs the controller out of my hand and tries to play. So that's what she wants to do for all of our upcoming trip is learn how to play Halo. But no, I have no idea what else happened this weekend. It's been a hectic morning, sir. And we already talked about the important thing I did, which was Heat.
I have a $700 couch potentially ruined. So my day's not going well so far. This is going to push my editing back today. I want to watch little Steph Curry break the 3-pointer record that Ray Allen set at MSG.
Little Steph. TV.
Little Steph. He's a little Steph. He's 6'2". That's a little for NBA. It's a little.
It's true.
So why are you going home, Ian?
Going home to see my parents for Christmas.
Christmas, Ian.
Christmas.
Christmas. Well, ho, 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 Ian.
Mm-hmm.
I know we weren't supposed to gift today, but I got a couple of pre-gifts for you that I think you would enjoy. So
okay.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Okay. The first one, I might explain it to you, but take a look. And this is the goat gift wrap, by the way, the little kitten. Skip that I had for 10 years.
Yeah.
Open that little. It's one I always use. I reuse it too because I don't know if I'm good.
Wake up and be awesome. All right. Oh, I like that. That's cute. It's a little Wood Zelda pin.
It's not a pen, Ian.
It's not a pen. What is it?
It's a needle magnet.
Oh.
So,
a needle magnet.
So there's two ends to it. So when you're working on your crocheting, you can put one on one side and that and the other and it holds it in place.
That is so cool. Look at that.
I guess you could use that as a magnet too, but that's not the primary function.
No, that's awesome.
Are you going to use that? You use that crocheted in Buffalo?
Yeah. I will definitely use that. That's so cool. Taking that with me. Thank you, sir.
So, and then this other one. Open it up. Open it up.
Oh, that is good stuff.
It is the OSW, Old School Wrestling Podcast, Macho Man Christmas Sweater.
That thing is fantastic. Oh, thank you.
Did you know they did that?
No, I did not.
You did not? Okay, good. It was a surprise then.
No, that's amazing.
Show it more. Show it more.
I have to get something for you, sir.
Okay. And that was not given to us. I purchased that, but check it out. I think they're mostly sold out, most of the sizes.
That's amazing.
Check it out. Our friends at OSW, the Old School Wrestling, well, it's a podcast and a video show, and they've provided countless hours of entertainment.
They're good folks.
So now the hat's off. So we'll exchange gifts for real when Ian's back in a couple of weeks. Put the hat back on. What do we got here?
I brought you tamales.
Oh my God, Ian!
It's four tamales. It's two pork verde, two cheese tamales. This is the person that Vani and I have been going to for 12 years.
Okay.
They are fought over by people like Traig and my
co-host. What do you mean fought over? Because there's not enough there?
No, people like every year people ask me for them. We ordered Vani picked up nine dozen tamales last night to be handed out as gifts. Or last night. To be
nine
handed,
dozen?
Nine dozen we bought from the guy.
Thank you. And should this be refrigerated?
They're fine, but you can refrigerate them.
Well, we're doing a podcast, but...
Steam them.
Steam them?
Steam them.
How do I steam them?
You put a steamer basket in there.
I don't have a steamer basket. I'm not a chef, Ian. The steamer basket.
We'll figure out something. Put a grate in there. Or
put water up and then put something on top, yeah, like a colander?
Put a colander in there and cover it. Just let it heat up that way.
Okay.
And leave them wrapped in the corn husks while you're doing that.
And that's better than like baking them or...
Baking them or microwaving them will dry them out. When tamales are cooked, they're steamed. The problem is a lot of, like...
Oh, so these are uncooked?
No, they're cooked.
Just to heat them back up.
To heat them back up. That's how you want to do it. Otherwise, it'll get dry on the outside.
Okay, I'll try that. So I'll boil some water. And then I'll put like a colander
over the top and then put a lid over that and let it sit for 10 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Ian.
You're welcome. Enjoy.
You know, while I was picking around looking for the analog pocket in there, I was like, I'm going to let Ian say what's in this tray. I thought it was going to be the chili you promised me 5 months ago, but that's okay.
No. No. That'll come.
I'm happy you like that little
thing.
Yeah,
that's very neat. I like that.
That was like Comic-Con.
Really?
There was a whole booth of those.
Oh, wow. I wasn't there.
That's why you didn't go.
No, my back was shit.
That's why I'm sorry.
It's a little bit better now.
That's why I was like, oh, man. No, it's not a man. Come on. Pat personalizes gifts here. Come on.
But yeah,
you got to make Amanda cozy for me with that.
I like that. Moving on.
Speaking of analog, the pre-orders are back up. We're going to have the full review later on the podcast. But they put up their pre-orders again. There's three batches. You got to get in earlier.
It's probably too late now.
Well, for the first batch, but or second batch maybe, but quarter one 2022, quarter four 2022, and then quarter one 2023 are the three batches, right?
Yeah, so. I'm happy that Analog is doing this. I've had plenty to say about Analog, how they do their pre-orders and their advertising. I love their products. I don't love everything about the company. I'm very happy to see this. I saw a lot of people. So they're doing it in three batches, quarter one, quarter four, 2023, as Pat said. Yeah. I saw a lot of people complaining, well, what if I get in the... Well, then don't fucking buy
I don't know
one.
How else you do it.
Right.
Unless you do a lottery system, how else are you going to do it?
This is what everyone wanted.
This is
how Playdate did it. This is how, they are letting you order, and depending on when you get your order in, you will get one. I am sorry if it's a popular item and you don't get your item until later.
It's a luxury electronic item.
Yeah, it's a luxury
item.
It's
not needed.
I absolutely understand people not wanting a company to hold on to their money for a year, but you don't have it. This is how, if you want it, this is how you get it. It's time to stop complaining.
And Analog delivers products.
Right. It's here.
They're not a fly-by-night company.
So you'll get it.
So
I understand, but I feel like a lot of this is just people being needy.
It's just that they're disappointed. And it's just, I want things.
People
now.
Want it, but I hate to say,
I hate to use the word privilege, but it's a little bit of like, if you're worried about this, come on, your life's not bad.
And if you think suddenly magically you're not going to want one in 2023, then you shouldn't be buying one in the first place.
I mean, they did raise the price 10% to $220. Understandable with everything you want. Everything's increased.
Playdate did it. I don't care. Yeah, $20 pay raise is a price hike is not something I'm going to slaughter them over.
No, I'm not going to do it.
But yeah,
trust me, some of that's built in with the shipping cost too. Shipping is nuts, so they got to make up some of it probably there as well. To be honest.
So we'll talk more about that later, though. Plenty to say.
Game Awards happened, and we don't fucking care
Most part. Fuck the Game Awards. However, I will cover these things that I watched after the Game Awards and not during. I've become a big fan of Sonic the Hedgehog lately.
I know, unfortunately.
I've always been.
I've seen the evolution.
But it's nice to have... I don't ever expect much from the games. It's just nice to see something and be excited and go, hey, there's Sonic.
I wish I can get excited for this character. I have, like, no feelings at all towards this character. I gotta sneeze.
You have no emotion. No heart. No heart.
All right, Grinch, I just gave you a present.
No heart.
That you like.
Well, you also are talking bad about Sonic the Hedgehog. There are two big things came out regarding Sonic the Hedgehog. We saw the trailer for the new game, Sonic Frontiers.
You saw it. I didn't watch it.
It's open world looking. It looks Zelda-y. And I will play it. But what I'm more excited about immediately is that we saw the trailer for Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie, part two.
I did see the trailer.
And I'm excited for it. It comes out on April 8th. It looks like a Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
It looks better than the first one, off the trailer.
Just looked better than the first one, and I enjoyed the hell out of the first one.
The first one looked like hot garbage for me, I'm not going to lie. I thought it looked like the typical, fish out of water, low budget, would just run around in a truck with Sonic.
Did you watch it?
No, I didn't watch it.
Okay. Then I don't care.
Am I wrong on that, though, assessment?
I mean, it's
most of the movie he's just running around with a guy and just like, oh, what am I doing here?
I mean, not really. It's kind of. It's a kinda, buddy movie. Yeah,
exactly. It's a buddy movie.
Okay.
The same. I mean, but you got Tails in this one. And
it's far better.
I am a fan of Tails.
Well, here's
I am a fan of Tails. Look at my vintage Tails plush. It's probably worth $100 by now.
This is actually something I wanted to bring up because it's fairly important. Her name is the voice actor, Colleen O'Shaughnessy, is the person who's been doing Sonic or Tails' voice, I believe, since Sonic Adventure.
Okay.
And it's what people wanted to see. It's rare that they use voice actors from a video game when they make transitions to movies. They always try to go with some, well, like Chris Pratt. I mean,
it's a joke. There's another role he came up with recently that Chris Pratt's going to be voicing. It's not even a joke anymore.
You can tell this movie wants to be accepted and loved by the fans because they are doing things that other movies generally don't and things that people have complained about. Like I said, getting the actual video game voice actor to do the voice for Tails. So I think that's pretty great.
Chris Pratt's doing Garfield. We've run up so far. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's got like four major voice acting roles.
So I'm excited for it. It was great to see Idris Elba.
Do you think it's too much introducing both characters in the same movie? You don't want to hold Knuckles for the third movie?
Nah, I think it's fine. I think it's fine.
I mean, with Sonic, I mean, just
I don't think it's going to be too complex.
I don't know what the lore is to these characters.
And that gives Sonic a second buddy. Enemy to go after, so it's not just, you know, Robotnik again.
And a real buddy, a furry bunny, not just a human.
A furry pal,
not just
a
human character that probably won't be in the movie as much this time around.
Tyson Hess, who does a lot of Sonic art, has done some of the Sonic comics and his own comics that are really good, that I like. Is I'm happy. The storyboarder for it.
I'm happy you're happy, Ian.
He's the storyboarder for it. He says he's excited for it. I think it's going to be... I think it's going to continue the tradition of Sonic movies being decent. And I think it's probably going to be better than that Mario movie.
The tradition of Sonic movies being decent.
Well, what do you expect? I mean, what more can you ask for with video game movies? We haven't got... I mean, it's the best we've got.
You think the Mario movie won't be as good?
No.
With Nintendo probably at the reins to make sure it is this time?
I don't see Mario transitioning to a movie nearly as well. We'll see.
Okay. We'll see. I don't think it'll be bad. I don't think it'll be great. They showed the only thing I'm going to talk about since everyone brought it up to me. They showed the Matrix demo in the new Unreal Engine. Unreal Engine 6? I don't know.
5.
Five. It looks incredible. It's almost photorealistic. It's just what people are saying. Like,
it's nuts.
The inanimate objects, the roads, the buildings, it looks real. Like the cars look real. The faces, sure. You're getting close. You're getting closer on like the faces and people. It's close.
The faces are very close, and they no longer have those dead, uncanny valley eyes that were so prevalent in the PS4 and Xbox One era.
I think that's more of an animation thing versus the engine. But
sure, like, there were definitely games on the PS4 that didn't have that, but...
That's an animation thing, I think. But, an artist thing. But... No, it looks great. When I first saw it, I'm like, wow, is this going to be a new game? Because they're like in a shootout with the cars, with the agents.
No, it's literally just a themed tech demo.
Yeah. That's the legacy of Unreal. That's the legacy. That's it. We can't do a fucking game anymore. Epic. But, you know, it's a basis for basically Fortnite. And it's the basis for, you know, the engine that's not just revolutionizing gaming industry. They're starting to use it for movies as well.
Oh, sure.
So, like, the Unreal Engine is blowing up. They still use the Unreal logo. I mean... You can't do a game. You can't do a game. It's giving you everything, Epic. They've given you everything this game franchise has. Get back a little bit. That's all I have. Is that unreasonable? Is that unreasonable? Sorry, it's been 14 years since the last game.
That's fine.
It's been 14 years. 14 years since the last game. The creator of the NES and Super NES passed away. Masayuki Uemura. It's not a name I saw brought up a lot in the pantheon of, you know, Nintendo. He was a lead designer of both consoles. He was 78 years old. He joined Nintendo in 71 and that's an incredible run, obviously.
Oh, that's a
just those two consoles like that. Jesus.
That's a massive career.
It's over 100 million consoles sold.
I want to bring it up. You know, I think this is why it, you know, doing a little bit of a deep dive into video game history preservation, all that stuff is important because there's no reason why we shouldn't. I mean, if we're really into video games, there's no reason why I shouldn't know the name of the guy who designed the NES and Super Nintendo. And I don't. I hate to say it. I didn't know his name until he passed away. And that's sad. But, you know, this is why I think it shine a light on the positives. This is why it's good that people are gathering this information now.
Well,
putting out histories and books so that we know the people who were truly. It's not that Nintendo did this. We know the person who did this.
Well, that's also the culture of a company, probably like Nintendo Japan. It's like, well, the individuals don't matter as much as the company making this stuff.
Potentially, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like he wasn't. He really wanted to. He could have like put his name out there by himself. But that's not what the culture is. It's like, I did a job. I created this, and that's it.
Fair enough.
He's been teaching the past since 2004. He was teaching at a university at a Chiba Institute of Technology. That's a good run. It looks like a fine fellow. Man, two bangers in a row. And it's like, all right, that's good. That's good.
Two bangers in a row. Went platinum on both of those.
You know what's a banger? UltimateNintendo.com is a banger. It's a banger for Christmas gifts. Get your orders in, I'd say, by the 16th. At best, to have a chance to get it delivered by the 24th. Because there's no deliveries on the 25th, which is a Saturday this year. You got books. You got the pins. You got the enamels. If you want our chubby faces on your lapel, you can do that. RBI baseball stickers up the wazoo. Ian can now fit one on his new laptop. It takes a lot of real estate if you want to do that. I put stuff over that. Make it like a base coat.
I'm not doing it yet because it's a smaller laptop. I got a really nice big sticker that I got for my next laptop, but now that this is smaller, I'm like, do I want it to take up all that space?
We also have limited t-shirts left in limited sizes at UltimateNintendo.com as well.
Limited shirts and limited sizes.
So get your order in today. I'll be on Cameo Wednesday. I was doing a sale on cameo.com/Pat Contry. I'll be on Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/Contry Code. But if you want to give it Cameo as well, 80s and 90s commercials on Twitch. It's fun.
You're fun.
Rats playing Doom.
How about it?
Doom 2 in particular.
How about it?
It's a heartwarming story. You don't want to give these rats are smart. You don't want to make them too smart, though, to take over the world. But it was an experiment done with a few different rats. So former Feinstein Institute's neuroengineer Victor Toth set a simple goal. He wanted to teach rats to play the classic 94 video game Doom 2. This is from Futurism. So he mocked up a stage to make it easier for the rats to get through. Gave them a cute little like ball so they can run like maneuver on.
Right.
And they run through a level. Like the through sugar water to teach them what they're doing is right. They can run through a Doom in theory. They can run through it. Now, when it comes to the weapon use, they still don't know the rats are like, this is weird. I know this is weird. So they put an imp in the level. You can look at the video. It's adorable. By the way, there's three rats. The best one was Romero at running through it, what I read. But if you look at the video, it's literally like a ball they're on.
Yeah, and it stands on top of a mouse, essentially. Yeah, and however
a mouse
it
ball, but big mouse ball.
And however it runs,
the rat's on the mouse ball.
Yeah, that's right.
So they put him in a cute little harness. Oh, you didn't get that.
I did. It took me a minute.
So in the level, there's a little imp that shows up, and so they're trying to gauge away because obviously little rat fingers can't hit a lot of buttons. So he's trying to rig a way for the rat. I think that's to like push back in order to activate the weapon to fire. And so right now the scientist is doing it himself to try to teach rat this is what you do there. But the rat's looking like you can see the rat stop and it's like, what just happened here? Like someone shot for me. Like the rat realizes this is not like this is out of the ordinary.
No backseat drivers. Let me play the fucking game.
Well, you gotta get past the imp though. True. So but that's the next step. Once the rat learns how to use the weapons, now we can see, and they're gonna put this on Twitch. You get the rat to figure out to shoot the imps. Now we're on to something here. Now I want to. Now I'll watch Doom Rat on Twitch every single day. Yeah. I don't care if the levels just go forward and it shoots things. It's amazing that they can train rats to do stuff like that.
There's a question here. Why did you choose Doom 2? Why not Duke Nukem Wolfenstein and Legend of Zelda?
Off.
So the answer would be because Doom 2 is one of the greatest video games ever made. But he replied much nicer than I would have. The plan was always to train them on the first map of Doom 2. I thought the first map was perfect because it has all kinds of environments. It's easy, clear corridors, simple turns, bigger spaces. Test a lot of stuff in there, and also because Doom 2, and this is a good point, Doom 2 is very easy to edit.
Yeah, and it's Wolfenstein is simple as well. It's the same simplicity. You know, you walk and you shoot. I mean, that's basically what you do. In this version, they mocked up the doors to open automatically because, you know, you don't want to have to constantly press buttons.
Right.
You know, you don't want the rat.
You can help the rat a little.
Yeah, you don't want rat to be looking, pushing against all the walls looking for the secrets. Have the rat just go and nose the secrets and go across the wall. So it's an automatic button press. You know, when you go for it there. So it's adorable. Hopefully we see Romero or his friends on Twitch.
Oh, that's great. That's so cool.
Doing that. GameStop. Quarter three results were not good, Ian.
Yeah, just a brief reminder that the stock market boom, the health of a stock does not represent the health of a company.
No.
Not long term.
And their revenue stream.
It represents the speculation on a company and how well they're going to be doing. And GameStop, obviously, last year we talked about it on here. You couldn't miss it. It was all over the news. People took a very low dead GameStop stock and pumped it up to hundreds of dollars, and lots of people got rich. Including the CEOs. But this didn't magically create a need for GameStop to continue existing.
No.
All it did was give golden parachutes to the, you know, C-suite that's going to be leaping out.
It gives your company more money to play with, yes, obviously.
But from all the articles we've read and heard, this money is not being trickled down to stores.
Well,
of course not.
They did do a stock sell-off earlier this year because that's where you get the money from. Okay, we sell off some of our stock, we get the cash to keep going. So this is what happened. For the 3 months ended October 30th, the company reported net sales of $1.29 billion, a 29% increase on the $1 billion made during the same period in 2020, probably because the new consoles came out. But that they didn't turn a profit, though, still. Net losses were $105 million for the quarter.
Right, because GameStop has no real reason to exist.
And the loss last year was $18.8 million. So what the hell's happening? They lost almost $100 more. But they lost only $111 million quarter two. They're losing money every quarter. Like, they're losing money every quarter still. You're losing $100 million every quarter. That's not good.
No.
You can survive for a small amount of time. But my God. But we're starting the new console generation. This is it for the... I mean, you're still trickling out console sales for GameStop. But like, there's less and less a need. But you buy them directly, these consoles, from Microsoft and like Sony.
Well, and the other thing that I don't think I've ever really mentioned is... But that goes on with this. You mentioned like the new consoles being having launched.
Having been launched, yes.
Reset yourself, Ferguson. Okay. The amount of games that comes out for these systems is far less than they were on PlayStation, N64, 360, sure. PS3. And so there's less people going in to buy shit. There's just less stuff to sell all around.
So they raised $1.13 billion, I should have read it before, through the stock sale. So that was in June there. So they basically raised almost $2 billion by selling back stock that was pumped up to ridiculous amounts. Because it became a meme stock, and obviously all the short sellers that went overboard on the short. We went through the math back in like March when this happened. About this has nothing to do with the company's outlook or health of it. It went for people betting against it, but too many people were betting against it at the same time. Basically, hey little ducky. So there you go. What else is going on, Ian?
It's Spider-Man: No Way Home.
It's out. We'll have a full review next week, Ian.
Yeah.
If you're going to see it by Tuesday, please tell me you're going to see it by Tuesday.
No, I'm not going to see any of the Spider-Man movies. You can spoil it for me.
Okay.
Just I'm not.
You haven't seen any of the three new ones?
I haven't seen any of them.
You haven't seen any of the Sam Raimi ones you didn't see?
No, I mean, I saw one and two of the Sam Raimi ones. I have not seen the Garfield ones. I have not seen any of the MCU ones. That was kind of the beginning of the end for the MCU for me.
Okay.
So I haven't paid attention to it. So I'm not going to see it, but I don't care what you say about it.
Okay. Well, the reviews are coming out so far. It's like 100% of Rotten Tomatoes from what I saw.
Nice.
I'm trying not to get super spoiled. From when I read a couple of reviews, the reviewers are doing a good job not spoiling. They're not required not to spoil, but they're like keeping it like non-spoiler. They're like, oh, it pays an homage to the last 20 years of Spider-Man movies without saying like, well, does that mean the actors are in it or just the villains that we know from the trailers and commercials? Like, that's not a secret. Like, they're doing a good job, like,
yeah,
keeping the secret. Like, it's amazing. Like, I still don't know, and we're 2 days before it comes out. I still don't know. Like,
right.
I mean, I know, but like, they've kept it under wraps there. And speaking of Spider-Man, the Stan Lee NFT was announced. The Stan Lee NFT from Stan Lee's Twitter.
So fucking sick
from the Stan Lee's Twitter account. Ian, if I die, can you do an NFT from my Twitter account? That'd be great.
Mm-mm.
I'll do one for you.
No.
This is the Stan Lee Twitter. From championing diversity to embracing new tech, they got to put that in here, Stan was one step ahead of the curve. To honor his innovative spirit, Stan's first Indian hero, Chakra the Invincible, debuts his own NFT.
Fucking milk his corpse dry.
Its own NFT, digital art in parentheses, collection from 7:30 Pacific, whatever. So the comments were not good.
They never are. All these companies are doing these things, and like there is no positive feedback outside of a small space, but it's making them money because that small space keeps fucking spending money on these things.
It's the small speculators.
But the public take on NFTs is their dog shit. I've never seen something more universally accepted.
The energy,
this is garbage.
The energy use is unnecessary. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. Dictionary.com responded. The word defile was first recorded in 1275 to 1325.
I love it.
It comes from the old French word defile, meaning to trample on, violate. So a little editorializing from dictionary.com.
I don't know if you pay attention to dictionary.com, but they do it a lot, and I love them for it.
They do that a lot.
They oftentimes will post like words on a day without saying what it's related to, but it's obviously related to what's the biggest thing on Twitter.
They politicize, and it's fun.
It's fun.
Jack Septicai said, the big YouTuber, this is awful. He just said, this is so awful.
Who said that?
Jack Septicai. Yeah. one of the larger, mostly unproblematic YouTubers in the space there. It's horrifying. And we're rocketing towards it, and we'll have a... As I take off, I'm getting hot. As we get into the podcast, we'll be talking about NFTs. This is a we don't usually do T's like this.
No, but two teases in this fucking
NFTs
intro.
Invading gaming. We'll talk about NFTs a bit more later on.
Yeah.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This portion of the CU podcast is sponsored by Guy Arez from Retrobit, a classic 16-bit shooter for the Sega Genesis.
Retrobit Publishing strives to provide re-releases of some of the most rare and unattainable classic titles, like Gyarus. They work closely with their partners to bring these unique retro games to fans from around the world. In Gyarus, Mother Earth has been turned into an environmental wasteland. Now, the human race has one final chance to save the Earth with your help. The United Star Cluster of Lizaloth will help the humans settle a new world if they are able to take out the intergalactic terrorists known as the Gulfer. Fail, and they will force our sun to supernova, destroying the entire system. But there is still one brave hero willing to fight for our survival, Ace Pilot Dan Dare. We love Dan Dare. Along with Alexis, the former messenger of Lizaloth, and the new TOZ weapon system, we have a chance. Journey through 8 stages of brutal space combat, enormous bosses, and gorgeous cutscenes, all on the 16-bit cartridge. This limited release has a translucent Tektite cartridge, full-color instruction manual, reversible cartridge inlay sleeve, it's individually numbered, exclusive interview with James Bunker, an embellished slipcover, a free t-shirt, and each sale will provide a donation to the Video Game History Foundation.
That's a lot of stuff, Ian, in that limited release. Check out Guy Arez at retro-bit.com and pre-order it by December 19th. Ian.
Patrick.
It was a big time.
Big news. Big stuff.
The Analog Pocket. Here's our review of it. Analog was nice enough, kind of sent us a review unit for us to look at. They also sent us the dock and a lot of the other accessories, like the nano loop accessories for music creation and things like that. We won't focus on that too much just because, you know, obviously most of the audience is more interested just in the pocket itself and the dock.
I'll talk about everything a little bit.
Start with the, you know, are you excited to get your hands on the dock, Ian?
You mean the pocket?
Excuse me, yes, the pocket.
The pocket, yes. So, this, like, as Pat said, this is a review unit. However, I have lots of my own money tied up in this. So, if I was not happy, I would not be saying...
Ian has pre-ordered one.
Yeah, I actually have stake in this.
Good stake.
So, I was very excited to get my hands on it. I spent a little bit of... There's a few months here where I tried to forget about it. And then in the lead up to it coming out, I got really excited again. I really wanted to get the unit in my hand, see how it felt, see how it played, and I really wanted to see that screen. So, Pat lent it to me. I took it home.
I played it as well.
Charged it up a little bit.
I played it for a day.
And the first thing I will say is when you hold the unit in your hand, It feels nice.
It's solid.
It feels like a premium item. It feels like they put lots of effort and thought into the design of it. It's heavy. I handed it to my friend Lincoln, who I didn't say anything about the system to. You had told me, you know, ahead of time, you're like, hey, it's really solid. But I handed it to Lincoln without saying anything. And within 5 seconds, he looked at me and goes, damn, this feels nice. And I was like, yeah. I think with a handheld, that's going to be your first impression. They knew it, and they made sure that that thing felt pleasant to hold.
It was a couple pounds almost, it feels like.
I'd put it at a pound and a half.
Yeah, it's over a pound.
But not like overly heavy. Like
no, the weight
that you want to see on something that costs you $200.
No, no.
Yeah, so I really liked it. And then I went through and I started putting Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance games in. I started off with Sheep It Up on the original Game Boy. I decided I spent so much time thinking about what my first game would be, and I went with Sheep It Up. Sheep It Up is a homebrew that was released about 5 years ago. Very simple game. I love it. And so obviously it plays great. Starts up like you'd expect it to. Looks beautiful on the screen. I was not expecting to actually be as impressed with the screen as I was. Analog, and they talked about this when they announced it, there are different modes you can put the screen in depending on what system.
What platform.
What platform the game is for that you put in the pocket. Game Boy has the most options thus far. So you can put the game, there's analog GB, which is their own display type. There's Game Boy,
which DMG, has nested subtypes we'll get into.
Yes. There's DMG. There's Game Boy Pocket,
which is black and white.
And Game Boy Light.
Which is like
light blue tint.
The light blue one that came out in Japan.
I've got the Pokemon, the Pikachu one. Yeah.
Didn't come out here.
And with the DMG mode is a little too green for me, but with the exception of that, I really like the pocket mode and the light modes. Now, what these modes do, the standard ones, the DMG, the pocket, and the light, they try to recreate how the screen would have actually looked if you're playing on a system. So you
on the real
see,
hardware, yeah.
You see where all the pixels are. It looks like a screen that was, I believe the term is properly biverted. That's a mod that is commonly done, where it makes it very clear, and you can see the pixels very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
No blur. Everything is very smooth. Everything is very easy to see. The color contrast is great on those modes. Analog GB is more of a modern, like, upscaled rendition of it. So you don't really see the pixels as much as you do sharper lines. And when you are in analog mode, you can apply different color palettes.
Yeah, you have grayscale. The default is almost like super, almost smoothed out sort of look. But then you have the other ones, mint, blue, green, and purple, which gives it like a almost like Super Game Boy look in a way, where it's like a
Super Game Boy added more of a palette. This is really just
one dominant color.
But it's a neat effect. I like it.
I liked it from when I tried it.
It's a neat effect. I liked it, but I will be honest. And this is not a knock on them because they actually did it. I really, really love the pocket screen setting.
I use the pocket a lot.
And the light screen setting.
They also have, this is a new firmware one, you would be able to do your own custom, looks like analog display colors on it.
Yeah, so
that's a good idea.
That was going to be coming.
And they also have the one we didn't talk about, which was the DMD display that I thought it was great when I played it. I actually played a couple of games. I played DuckTales in that.
The DMG display?
DMD.
Oh, the pinball style.
The Neon Matrix pinball mode. I actually enjoyed that. Did you use that?
I'm not a huge fan of red.
Well, you're red, green, colorblind. That's right.
I mean, I can see it, but I don't love it. It's kind of harsh.
It was interesting to me because it didn't hurt the eyes. It's closer to like a Virtual Boy look, but not as harsh.
Yeah.
And I play, I think, DuckTales 2 with it. I'm like, this actually isn't bad. It actually is like a neat little effect. They didn't have to put it in. Tetris didn't have to put it in, but it's like, there it is. It's there. Real quick on the form factor, I like that it's like a combination of a GBA SP and just a Game Boy a pocket. It's like a perfect combination to me. You have four buttons, convex and concave face buttons. Thank you. And you save plastic slightly. You have your
You don't. You don't save any plastic. It's either popped out or puffed in.
Oh, that's right. It equals out.
It's the same amount.
It equals out. You're right. I thought you'd save money. Well, instead of doing four con, instead of doing four, you know, concave. Yeah. Okay. So you have your two triggers, which feels like an SP. The D-pad feels really nice. It feels, from what I gathered, what I learned, it's the same size as a Game Boy.
It is.
One. So,
my thoughts on it: D-pad, great. Face buttons, great. Shoulder buttons, personal preference. Never particularly liked the SP style shoulder buttons. It's a little cramped.
A little too cramped for you.
I like the wideness. But I do like the form factor. I like the way it looks. I love the pocket form factor, which is what the original Game Boy pocket form factor, which I feel like this is what this was aiming for the most.
Yeah. The start and select are down below. I would have personally liked the start and select buttons to be maybe a little bit further away from the analog button. That's, or just a different size to more quickly differentiate it. That's just me. The sound quality in this is like, the speaker is really, really nice on this. I was surprised how bright and clear the volume was on this.
There has been a trend in recent years to make the maximum volume on something very low because people don't trust us with our hearing. Fuck you. I love the sound on this thing. This thing is almost too loud. Which is fine.
I think I played
it. Great, because no one, you adjust it based on what you want.
I think I played it at like 75% audio, and that was like well loud enough. Like 75-80, it was like, you know what I mean? Like it was fine. Like I couldn't picture myself ever needing it louder than that.
Yeah.
No, it was good. I ran through Game Boy games real quick. Compatibility was great, except for the one off I'll talk about. I did the Game Boy the camera.
I could not find my camera. I have one, so I did not.
I did it. It worked fine. Yeah. I did the WarioWare GBA game, Twisted. It worked fine. The only thing was it's a little more awkward not having it wide at GBA versus this to move it, but yes, it worked fine. Everything I worked. It plays Doom. I played Doom on the Game Boy Advance.
So
the only thing it doesn't play, unfortunately, it does not play the Bible games.
That's not even a software thing. That's like a legit hardware thing.
Because the cartridges
like
the
way the hardware, like,
yeah,
a physical problem.
Yeah, because the way those cartridges were made, they're like an open board. They're not like closed off. And from what I read, that just doesn't work well with how this does. But if you have like Captures told me, if you have the Game Boy Game Genie, you can plug it in that and plug it in. It should work.
Right.
So if people are like, oh, I'm not going to pre-order because you're not playing my Wizardry games. That's it. That was it.
In addition to trying Sheep It Up on there, I did try another homebrew that, you know, sometimes has problems running on Game Boy systems because it's a power draw. It played fine on it. That was Dangan GB. It's a shooter. That one played fine. Then I moved on to...
Did you try, I'm sorry, maybe the analog OS at all? Because I think I sent a few, but
there's nothing there.
There's nothing there yet? That's still going to be there?
As far as I can tell, there's really nothing there yet.
But there's quick load, quick save on here.
That I have not messed with.
So you don't have total save states yet, but you have at least one for each game right now.
Okay.
I believe.
Moved on to Game Boy Color. Game Boy Color games. I think the screen for Game Boy Color, oh man, the screen settings they have specifically for Game Boy Color are hot. They're hot as shit. I love them.
Can we talk about the brightness at all? Like, I was never playing on 100% brightness. It wasn't needed. I was like, you have it on 75 right now, and that's fine.
I had it on 50 for most of it. That was like, honestly just me messing around.
The screen is fantastic on this. Yeah. Like, the screen is fantastic on this.
The selling point for the pocket.
And it's a heavy glass, by the way, on top. It's like a
despite FPGA, glass, which I'll kind of talk about in a little bit, is the quality of the build. And the quality of the build needed to be good to justify people purchasing this. And I will tell you, I mean, personally, I love the screen. Love the screen to death. I think the screen honestly makes it worth it.
Yeah.
So there. And it really depends on how much you're into your Game Boy and stuff like that. If you're not going to fucking use the thing, you don't need it. But like...
Oh, no. Yeah.
This is a system that is meant to be used. Like, it's a joy to use. All the settings are great. So Game Boy Color also has an analog setting and then a Game Boy Color setting. And I think that might be it. There might only be two settings for Game Boy Color.
I'll look right now. You said for Game Boy Color?
Yeah, there might only be two. And then GBA SP.
Yeah, you only get Game Boy Color and original Game Boy Color. You get the analog version and then that.
Luckily, they both look great. The Game Boy Advance SP, again, has quite a number of modes. It has an analog mode. It has the original SP, and it has the SP 101. So three modes, not a ton. Oh, okay. GBA, SP, SP-101, original analog.
How does the original analog one look versus the others?
Again, it kind of... It gets rid of the real noticeable separation of pixels and dots and makes it a smoother looking thing.
Like the Game Boy analog one does. A little more smooth. That you can tell it's not like...
I like it. It really depends on the game I'm playing. On that one, I alternate between the analog mode and the SP-101.
And you can do frame blending on this or sharpness, desaturation, on I think on the color as well, from what I saw. So frame blending, what is that? Is this, I guess it was a motion thing?
Don't know.
We're not into that.
Yeah.
This is a big one.
This is big. The audio.
The audio on the Game Boy Advance.
So huge.
It's a big one.
Big. I don't remember exactly what happened, so please don't slay me if I'm wrong. Something about the compression of the audio or the way the audio is on the Game Boy Advance, the way it plays back, it comes out of the speakers sounding crackly and tinny, depending. I don't know if it's compression or what. However, there is a way with the Analog Pocket to basically...
There's a high-quality mode.
There's a high-quality mode. So I don't know exactly the tech that goes into it, but other companies have been doing this as well. Konami recently released their Castlevania trilogy, the Game Boy Advance one, and they did the same thing. You can do original GBA audio, or you can do the enhanced. I was impressed to hear that it actually made a difference. The game I tested with that was Pokemon Pinball Ruby and Sapphire, and it can sound kind of crackly and tinny in spots.
Sure, like it's like overcompressed,
like
maybe.
Like it's peaking. It's hitting its limit.
Okay.
Sounds a lot smoother, a lot nicer with the GBA Advance.
So the audio sounds better than the original.
Yes, less popping, less cracking.
You won't play it normal ever again.
No, there's no reason. I don't feel like
including
a reason to.
In case you want to, right. Have the authenticity. The one thing I didn't talk about on here was the one thing. Play cartridge, no cartridge in right now. It boots up quickly from you sleep it and it comes right back. If you're playing your game, it'll come right back to it.
Tap it again to bring it back to play, keep the game going.
If I had a minor quibble, I would have loved the sleep button to be a little bit further away from the volume. They're right next to each other. I did hit it once or twice while trying to do the volume, but most of the time you adjust the volume before you play. That's a very minor quibble. You can mute it by hitting both volumes at the same time, which is a cool little function to do that.
Yeah.
If you didn't know that. I don't know if it's documented in the instructions, but I was told that, so that's cute. We haven't tried the link yet. Once Ian gets the second one, we can play Faceball 2000.
Yeah.
That'll be fun on that. Did you try the Game Gear?
Yeah. This is going to be the segment where I just kind of jump into everything else. The dock is going to require a little bit. That's a little bit more important. So let me do the dock. I'll talk about Game Gear first. I did check the Game Gear adapter. Had no problems with it. It was a lot of fun. Game Gear games stick up a little bit past the top.
A little bit. A little bigger boys.
So, I mean, it doesn't look as sleek, but it works. It works fine. It grips the games well. My concern was that it might be like a loose tower, but no, everything feels solid once it's in there. Yeah, it sticks in. Game Gear had three modes. It has an analog mode, it has a Game Gear, and then it has a Game Gear Plus mode.
And what's that?
I don't know if a Game Gear Plus was ever a thing. I think it might just be their attempt at doing like... So, obviously the difference between the Game Boy Advance SP and the SP-101 is front light versus backlight.
Okay.
The Game Gear was backlit, if I recall correctly. It is a backlight. But,
yeah.
I think the Plus just tried... I don't think there was ever a Game Gear Plus. If there was, someone can tell me. I think it was their attempt at making a bright... Basically, the original Game Gear screen, it looks like the Game Gear screen, but the Game Gear screen kind of sucked. So I think they did like an enhanced version that was kind of halfway between the Game Gear and their version.
They fiddled with it.
It still has like the pixel separation in that.
Okay.
And then there's the analog mode, which again is like all the other analog modes. So kind of smooth.
This is what's good about it. About you have some stuff that you would say, well, it's FPGA, but you also have like some cool... Like with a lot of the analog stuff, you get some stuff that you maybe in like some emulators you originally had, but this is on the hardware level. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So, and then obviously once this thing, I think what we're going to see is once this thing gets cracked, as they always do, I think we're going to start to see a lot more custom screen types. I think we're going to see some
even more
cool
than
stuff.
This.
I think we're going to see some really cool stuff done with this.
And obviously we're not there yet for the Turbo Express stuff or the Turbo PC Engine game. That's going to be incredible.
Or the Neo Geo Pocket or Lynx yet.
I mean, honestly... Lynx games on this are going to look amazing, yep. I think, to me.
I think so, too. Everything has looked amazing so far.
Ian's a big Game Boy guy. I will use this as my Turbo Express. It'll be the Turbo. it's worth too much money and is too fragile to use an actual Turbo Express.
Sure.
They're too rare. It's not like, you can play a Game Boy, Pocket or get an SP. You don't want to be chucking around a Turbo Express. They're worth hundreds of dollars. You know what I mean? Like, so this is what we want. This is what we've been asking for, you know?
Into a segment of the review that I'm not as keen on, the dock.
Okay, I'll get the dock out. We have to have a caveat, though. The dock is like doesn't have all the features on it yet. It's supposed to be next year. All the features.
It only needs to have one feature right now. That's what it was sold to me on.
Sure.
So the dock, hook your analog pocket up to your TV. It's sleek looking. It is also frustratingly minimal. There is one fucking button on the thing. And it doesn't tell you what it is either. I thought that was like
a
sync button. It's a power button.
Okay.
As of yet, I still have not played anything on my TV using the dock. Hate to say it, it's the truth. I followed the update instructions exactly. I pulled my hair out for 2 hours trying to get this thing working. Got it to update. After it updated, it never once again showed me a picture on the TV screen. I unplugged things, plugged them back in, tried again. Got nothing after my update. Unplugged everything.
Okay.
Walked away for 45 minutes. Went back to it one more time. All of a sudden, I started getting a picture on the screen again.
So you don't know what you did or what happened.
Unplugged everything for the third or fourth time and plugged it back in.
Okay.
And suddenly, I got a picture on the screen.
Okay.
But then comes the problem of pairing a controller. Please bear in mind that they do say this, but they mean it. As far as I can tell on the website, this thing only works right now with 8-bit DOE controllers. And I have to say that, USB or wire or Bluetooth.
You couldn't get a USB to work?
No, could not get, when I plugged USB controllers into it, I got the flashing light to stay solid, like it was recognizing it, but no buttons worked.
Okay. So it sounds like then the firmware in this is not close to being ready for commercial release.
Well, here's the thing. So they say it's ready for 8-bit DOE controllers.
Okay.
But here's where it gets more frustrating for me. I have an NES 8-bit DOE controller with 4 buttons, 2 shoulder buttons, a D-pad on it that was given to me brand new.
Mm-hmm.
I've never used it before. I took it out, plugged it in. I did get that to sync.
You did. Okay.
However, only the buttons registered. The D-pad did not register.
Okay.
So So unless the D-pad on that was broken brand new, it wasn't registering the D-pad.
Okay. Just as an aside, My Life in Gaming did a very, very thorough breakdown, obviously more than us, about the visuals and the hardware. They did look at the dock. It looks like they did get it to work. So they didn't have the issues that we did. But obviously they had more. But I'll just say this. If it was working, you can have it in 480p, 720p, 1080p, 60, or 50 if you're going for, a PAL TV. So, they got it working. So we just couldn't at this point.
Here's the deal. I'm not going to trash it. If I get mine, get it to update, and it works, and I'm enjoying it, I'm going to like it. However, I'm not going to lie and say it was an easy thing to set up.
Sure.
I have not, and I'm not, as far as I know, I am not the only person who has had issues with it updating. The other thing was I tried to get the M30 8-bit DOE controller to hook up. And this is kind of an 8-bit DOE problem. The M30 has a Bluetooth and a 2.4 gigahertz version. They don't specify that. It's still called the M30 no matter what.
Okay.
The 2.4 gigahertz version will only work with the analog Mega SG and the actual system. The Bluetooth M30 would. I spent 20 minutes trying to figure out why this 8-bit DOE controller would not hook up to the dock. That's a personal thing, but it was very, very frustrating.
So it's not like out of the box ready to go.
No, because it says you have to update it. It's not, I'd say for me, it was not a plug and play thing.
It wasn't plug and play. The pocket's a plug and play.
The pocket is a beautiful, wonderful thing. The dock is going to end up being a necessity that I think they are going to fix, but I'm not super jazzed on on my experience.
I'd say it's almost too early. That's what My Life and Gaming Guy said. We should really come back to this and give it a better review once the firmware is updated to see, because right now it doesn't have all the features on it. So
it was a pain.
So the hardware's done. The firmware's got to get up to speed for that.
Last couple of things real quick.
Okay.
There is a tempered glass screen protector that feels heavy duty. The hard case, I did not like when I first touched it. I have grown to like the hard case. Okay. I think it does a good job. Stays locked. It's hard. Feels nice. Feels strong. Like I said, the Game Gear adapter is real nice. Worked perfectly. No issues. And they did send us some test cables real quick. I did get into Nano Loop on there. Had a lot of fun with it.
They sent all three of the different cables.
So I can, I will, at some point, and I'll probably talk about it maybe in a writing, I will test out the pocket to analog timing cable, so I can actually hook that up to my analog synthesizers, not Analog the company. They also have MIDI transfer cables that I can use on other synths that I have.
We're not even talking about this. Like, the Game Boy Studio is on this. Obviously, it's too
early. I didn't touch at all.
Yeah.
As far as Nano Loop goes, I'm still better at using LSDJ, but Nano Loop's a lot of fun. Spend some time learning it. It's going to be a great thing to mess around with when you're bored and don't want to play a game and you're on a flight.
So once everyone has these in their hands as using the Game Boy Studio, we'll come back like next year and see like what cool games people have to share them and loading them on here.
So final pocket, 10 thumbs up.
Ten thumbs out of 10?
10 thumbs up. Doc, I'm going to have to wait and see.
It's almost like, yeah, the dock, it's a little bit too early. On that, if it was a final product, it would be bad, but it's firmware updates.
Well, it is final. I mean, they shipped it in this state. Yes, it's going to get more updates. Well, we often spend time on this podcast talking about how shitty it is when games do this.
Yeah, oh yeah, but that's just the reality.
It is. Yeah, but I'm not going to not call them out for it.
No, sure. I would give them more of a pass on a game on a hardware versus a game because it's so hard to get the hardware developed. You know, at this point. So it's like they got to get it developed on the ship.
A button, a menu, something that I can access without putting that on. That something that I can click that says install the firmware. It is, as I said, frustratingly minimal. And I get that some people get off on that.
Okay.
But give me a couple buttons. Give me a menu so I can try to wrap my firmware, head around what's going
firmware
on.
Firmware update this was easier, even though.
Super easy.
Yeah.
Pop the card in, turn it on, and
put the SD card in and it updates.
That's fine for something like this. It's not for that. I want a button. I want something to click on that says update because too much can go wrong. I don't want to brick that thing. But
you almost want them to set up their own server-side thing to put it to the computer to like download it.
Literally, give me something on the screen that says update now instead of just automatically doing that.
It just pulls it from the internet.
Because I think if people have problems, if they have problems with pictures going to their TV, if anyone has the issue that they're having that I had, you rip this thing out in the middle of an update or... You don't know what can happen to it. You can screw it up.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll come back in whenever, like February or whatever, when there's an updated firmware and give you more thoughts on that. But no, I think it's an outstanding...
The system? Absolutely.
The pocket's outstanding. I think it might have exceeded expectations. We all had high expectations for this, but I think the build quality alone, I'm like, cause this is the first handhold thing Analog's done, obviously, and I'm like...
No, it exceeded mine. I had gotten into it wasn't anything that Analog did, but I was just like, have I hyped this up too much in my head?
No.
But no, it's great.
And this is even before, like I said, the other few consoles aren't even on this yet.
Yeah.
Like, at that point...
Well, I mean, it's got a second FPGA. Eventually, all consoles are going to be on it. That's the point of it. All consoles that FPGAs are currently doing. That's why people are excited about it. That's why people are excited about the OS. Gotta keep saying that to you. It's going to get everything.
I'm getting television games on
this? It's going to get SNES. It's going to get NES. That thing is going to play everything up until probably the start of the, 32 and 64-bit era.
Sure.
Yeah, it'll cover all the retro stuff from Super Nintendo, Genesis on down. It'll do it. And I bet you it'll be able to do some arcade stuff too.
I can play Carnival and ColecoVision on this. This would be great.
Get me a CPS2 emulator on that.
All right. Well, Core. Thanks again, Analog, for the review copy. We'll hopefully see you maybe later next year with the Duo. We'll see when the Duo comes out. All right, Ian.
Yep.
NFTs.
So,
non-fungible tokens.
We're sitting around last night trying to think of another topic and
pulling the curtains back.
And I'm looking at this and like I had been keeping my eye on it all weekend to see if it was going to make a topic. But between Ubisoft Quartz and some famous game developers getting into this, we really decided that it was time to talk about NFTs.
And I didn't realize this was happening. Ian's like, hey, Pat, you see this? And I'm like, what just happened over the weekend? I saw the Ubisoft announcement, but the other ones I didn't. Okay, we'll get into
this. NFTs are dog shit. Fuck off with your NFTs. Ubisoft Quartz. Quartz was going to be Ubisoft's, might still be, first foray into NFTs. I believe they said they were going to do three of them. Three different types. I don't know how many of each NFT they were going to mint. For Ghost Recon, one of them. And they put out the video for it. And within 24 hours, I think the video had been taken down. Even though YouTube has gotten rid of the dislike count, there are still ways you can find out.
I didn't see this video that was taken down.
It was like a minute. And the video's not important, honestly.
Sure. Ubisoft.com.
So they took the video down because the video had amassed a 90% or 95% something like dislike ratio to likes. It had thousands upon thousands.
So the dislikes were visible on this video.
No, people.
They looked behind the scenes.
They looked behind the scenes.
They unlisted it. I'm on it now. They did unlist it.
So they unlisted it.
Okay. I'm watching it right now.
Because the backlash is this goes into what we were talking about in the intro. NFTs aren't wildly popular. In fact, they're incredibly unpopular. NFTs are a click, and they defend themselves. But if you look online, if you look in the comments of people who are announcing NFTs, the backlash is it's almost universally negative, like very, very negative. However,
they left the comments on, at least.
There are people who are, you know, generating money for companies doing this. So companies are going to do it until the money goes away. They're weathering the backlash, despite the fact that I would say 85% of people have no interest in this shit.
You have the few rooms that buy into it.
You have the 15% that are unfortunately whaling this with money right now.
Because to them, it's their form of get rich quick.
Right. So they took it down. But I think we're going to continue to see this in major games because it's going to make the money and they are going to bleed it dry. So much so that unfortunately, two fairly well-known, sometimes well-loved.
Can we talk about what they're actually doing first on this?
Yeah.
So with these Ubisoft dropped items and guns and things like that. So they're cosmetic. They specify that it's cosmetic only. But the advantage with the blockchain, this is why you're going to be wasting energy and getting people to buy in. You can track the specific cosmetic item or gun from player to player so they can be individually numbered. So you can be like, oh, I got the famous gun that this person used, Ian, or this one. I can just picture the giveaways now from the influencers and people in these games. You can get my gun and bid it up. Like, it's disgusting. This is the only thing that NFT does is that you can trace a specific item from person to person. And that's how they're trying to probably build the marketplace around this.
The problem with that is, as many people have said, and as anyone with an ounce of fucking brain power knows, you don't need the blockchain to do that. You just have to set up a fucking database and track it. Blockchain is NFT, the trendy word right now.
Yeah,
that's what people are jumping on.
A certain CEO of a video game company says their games are NFTs just because it's trendy.
You don't need NFTs or the blockchain to do any of this. Nothing the blockchain is doing is special. All the talk about the decentralization, your blockchain is hosted somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fucking sham.
But they're going to attract some people. Maybe not a lot, but they're going to attract some. They're going to get influencers involved to do their own stuff with this shit. And like I said, it's going to build a potential marketplace, Ian, because now you're going to have people going, like the same thing they did with, go back to the NBA cards with the serial number stuff. Mm. Hey, Ian, we both have the same weapon, but mine is like number 1 to 100. Yours is like 10,000.
I'm a record collector. I'm well aware of this. But the lower number on a numbered release is going to get more.
It means fuck all, especially if it's a digital item versus at least a physical item you know was produced in an order. This is a digital item. Yeah. There's no production with it.
Right. It means nothing.
It means less than nothing. But they're going to try to market it like that. They're going to try to go. You can see the lineage of this item get passed around.
But tell you what, you think this is going to last forever? As soon as this game goes down or these servers are gone, your NFT is fucked. Remember, your NFT is not the item. Your NFT is essentially your receipt of purchase.
It's your signature.
It's your receipt of purchase that says you own this and it links to something else. If what it's linked to ever disappears or goes down, like something like 70% of URLs eventually do within 5 years.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's gone. All you have is the receipt of purchase. That's like being excited that you bought like bread. Someone punched you in the face and took the bread, but you're like, I still got the receipt of purchase.
I want to read some of the comments, the top comments from the delisted video. Imagine if Ubisoft actually put some thought on making games that people like instead of aimlessly trying to print money. This is ridiculous as corporations are becoming fully unhinged with their anti-consumer practices that now that YouTube has taken away one of the only voices we have on this platform. Expect to see this happen more and more, meaning the downvotes.
Real quick, I just want to say that removing the downvotes, fucking miserable. I have to go through like 5 or 6 crochet fucking tutorials now to find one that's actually worth a damn.
The day Ubisoft decided they might as well go full evil, that was from Far From Subtle, folks. I think I met once in Canada way back. Ubisoft once again giving us something we didn't ask for, don't want, and won't enjoy. I think that's the biggest.
That was the comment I saw that I really
that's
like.
That's the biggest thing. We're in sync here, Ian. That's the comment that. And the thought about NFTs to me that really spells doom for it as a whole. No one said, hey, we need to have NFTs for our game. No one before this announcement said, like, this will be a good idea. No one. It's people in a boardroom saying, hey, NFTs are hot. We can make money. Let's fucking do it.
I know a lot of digital artists who this is supposed to be for. That was the original point of NFTs, who are like, no, this is dog shit. I never asked for this.
Yeah.
I sell commission, like I just sell commissions. There's no reason to have the shit on the blockchain. None. Reselling the receipt. I can think of
that's what you're doing.
I can think of certain instances where you could do this, but again, this could all be done with databases in different ways.
They're trying.
The blockchain is not as bulletproof as people think.
What they try to do with NFTs is make you think that this is like a physical item. They're trying to match it to a physical item in reality that you pass from one person to another. Like that. That's what they're trying to psychologically imprint on people. And most people are like, this is bullshit. But then you always have the people on Twitter, the hardened people like, no, you don't get it, man.
No, I get it.
We get it. We just think it's fucking stupid. And we see through it as a money grubbing scheme and a pyramid scheme in essence when it comes to how these NFTs are bought and sold. It's who's the idiot stuck with left with the bag basically.
There's a musician artist that I follow online, and if he listens, I'm sorry, I like you, but I had to stop following him because I loved the music. I loved the GIF art that they were doing. Like they were doing like animated GIF art, which before the NFT thing, which is essentially what most NFTs are.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I mean, it was really good stuff. But and when NFT came out, this person said, I'm not really into this NFT thing. I'm not going to do it. Then they found out that there was money in it. And literally their entire timeline just turned into NFTs. And it's like I kept following them for a long time because I liked the art. Like I still look at the art. They were a good artist. But like it stopped. It devolved into them bitching about having to mint things and gas fees and people not buying these limited editions. And I'm like, I'm sorry, man. This has completely fucking poisoned you. Like I can't do this anymore.
I feel bad. Obviously, when you're talking about an artisan level,
I want artists to make money, but like I know so many who are like, this is not the way.
I'm not going to get an anthropological sort of discussion about this, but obviously, art is a non-essential. It's the highest one up in terms of your life needs. I understand it's hard to make money. Artists, traditionally, it's the hardest thing to do is make money as an artist. However, I think when you go down this route as your bread and butter, the NFT thing, I think you do yourself some form of disservice because I think on some level, the only reason people want the art is because it's an NFT.
Right.
They don't care about the art itself.
Well, that's the thing. This guy has gotten popular, but that's the thing. Like, I think his art is great. I just don't, you're not blowing up because of the art. Otherwise you would have because you're prolific. You're blowing up because it's an NFT that people can purchase.
It's weird. It's almost like, why didn't they buy it before? Because the NFT wasn't attached and they couldn't buy and sell it.
Well, that's the thing. People act like this is the first time you've ever been able to buy digital art. Fucking commission something.
Yeah.
And commission something you want. Yeah. And if you don't want something specific, just patronize the artist. Give the artist money and say, hey, I want you to make a piece of art with this money.
I sympathize because I know it's a lot easier to do NFTs versus like, you know, printing prints and shipping them out to people, which is what they're trying to think what NFTs are, like having like a print that's like numbered or whatever with like a signature on it. I get that, but I think this backlash has only started with NFTs. This is not the end. I think we're going to go down this road where it's going to be not right now. If I talk to someone that's an NFT collector, I'm going to think you're a fucking lunatic at some point. I'm going to be like, you are certifiable.
Yeah.
Either that or your mind is so set on how do I make money off of this where you don't care? I'm not even talking about how the energy shit. Like the energy shit, I'm tired of talking about it. This shit uses so much energy, the blockchain stuff. And even they say this is going to be energy efficient, you're still using energy to do this shit that you wouldn't have to have done.
It's a completely non-essential part of the equation. You don't, again, well-made, tracked, and maintained databases would do everything that the blockchain is doing.
And it's not a small amount of energy.
Well, you can go in and you can change the database. You can't change the block. I don't care.
This isn't like running a toaster for like 10 seconds, the amount of energy this stuff takes.
We've seen plenty of blockchain heists and crypto heists. It's not like this is as secure as people want you to think it is. It's not as decentralized as people want you to think it is. It's not as secure, and you own dog shit.
You own dog shit. So let's talk about the more frustrating to you wasn't that the fact that Ubisoft was doing it, but
look, I don't give much of a shit about Peter Molyneux. He annoys me. Peter Molyneux is he's getting, I think it's like $100 million fund to start making some blockchain gaming. But more upsetting to me was Will Wright. Will fucking Wright. SimCity's Will Wright.
Good guy, Will.
Is, into NFT, and not recently. He already has a game out. I believe it's called Proxy, and it's part of these new games are being called, and they're already coming out. I have no idea if any of them are fun. They all look, I can't figure out what the fuck you're supposed to be doing in these games. They're called Play to Earn, and as someone pointed out the other day on Twitter, if Play to Earn is just a really weird, gross way of saying work, it's work. You are working, and you are not even working for yourself. Sure, you might get an NFT out of this if you put 100 hours into a game, but you're working for other people for nothing.
Oh, Ubisoft has one where you need to work, what was I saw, 600
hours? Yeah.
To get one for Ghost Recon. So we've crossed this bridge, and you're going to say, yeah, Pat, people have grinded MMORPGs for items and done like that and set up farms. That wasn't the feature of the game. That was like a bug of the items that you have
I would say it's a feature, but the end result is to beat the game that you're playing and enjoying, not to get something that you can sell for money.
But people do sell them, but yes.
They do, but
that wasn't the reason you played the game.
Yes.
They're making games now where the inherent reason you play the game is to get something that could be worth something.
Right.
That's what's gross about this.
Yeah.
They're trying to create, the game is basically trying to create its own economy.
It's gambling with your time, too.
Yeah, I guess so, especially if you're not sure which one you're going to get.
What it is. You're not spending money, but you're spending your limited man hours on this earth fucking trying to get a non-touchable picture of a monkey sucking a dick.
A token. You're getting a digital
token. I don't know
token.
What they do, but like it's awful.
It's a perversion of tech that... Where it's almost like, could they have done this 10 years ago with something else?
Jurassic Park, just because you could doesn't mean you should.
Thank you, Jeff Goldblum. You can keep your shirt unbuttoned, Jeff Goldblum. You're allowed to. It's interesting. I wonder if someone like Will Wright...
Mad.
I wonder if someone like Will Wright is almost just like... They're so out. Maybe I'm.
No, people have said that people who know him, this is actually pretty much par for the course.
Okay, I was giving him the benefit of the doubt. He's a guy who's just like, okay.
No, I think I was too, because he made so many great games we all loved. But I from what I've heard, this is fairly par for the course.
It's sad then.
Yeah.
Was the one I saw about, was this the one or the Molyneux one? It was like there's like land involved with the land value.
I was talking about that. So I think that's how a lot of this stuff works. But there is a Walking Dead NFT game being made now where the whole point is over this virtual land ownership, and people who play on your land generate you money. So you need to buy attractive virtual land, and then you need to set up your virtual land in a way to attract players and enemies. They even say this. So you're spending more money, and then people who play on your land will generate money and items and stuff for
a virtual slumlord.
It's gross.
NFT slumlord.
It's just like the sleaziest like end case of video gaming. It's awful. Oh, play these things that look like video games, but you're actually making money for people in the background.
Late stage video game capitalism? Is that where we're at with this shit? It happened so quickly.
It's gross. And that's the other thing. How quickly this happened.
I just learned about NFTs in like February. I learned about them. They haven't been around that long. It's been less than a year. It feels like it's been a decade with this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't it felt like forever?
It has.
All the NFT stuff, like Kevin Smith sold the distribution rights to one of his movies as an NFT. Alicia got something with it, but like it was an NFT, for example. Like all this stuff has been happening this past year. It's been nuts.
Again, the problem with doing Atari did the one with
all the little tokens,
with the actual signed cabinet that came with the set. Sure. There was one Centipede one. Is when you do that, you're also not letting NFTs stand on their own.
Oh, sure.
So it's hard to judge the value of the NFT, because in that instance, someone wanted a signed Centipede cabinet.
Yes.
In the instance of the Kevin Smith thing, someone wanted the movie rights. You didn't need the NFT. Yes. It's just to generate fucking useless buzz.
It was buzz. I didn't look up the distribution rights, but someone, a regular distribution house, is going to get the rights to that.
Right.
It's not going to be me or you. It's going to be someone's going to put up the money to get it. Oh, there's an NFT attached. So you learn about it. It's in the news. Otherwise, you might not learn about it in the news.
Exactly.
That's not something against Kevin Smith when it comes to that. But like, it's become almost so transparent as it's a marketing ploy in and of itself. The NFT, like I said, it's a buzzword. It's a buzzword.
Yeah.
All our games are NFTs, Ian. It got our attention.
Sure.
Whether or not that's true or not, it got our attention. We spoke about it.
Yeah.
Because we want to see how outlandish it is. So I don't know. Will there be enough pushback where even, because there's going to be people that buy into these ecosystems. There'll be people that buy into these ecosystems. I get the gun, Ian, that some famous YouTuber had, or I get the gun that we passed along that got like 100 kills in this and this esports tour. You know what I mean? Like, you can see how it gets perverted, and so that. But they're all cosmetic, though. It doesn't mean that doesn't help you win the game or get better, which would be gross in and of itself too. But for that stuff, I don't know when there'll be a tipping point where the backlash will even outlast whatever money the companies make doing it. But I have to imagine at some point they'll say it won't be worth it.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yep.
There'll be enough people that say, you know what, fuck you, Ubisoft, I won't be buying your games anymore. They'll see a downtrend in their sales where they'll be like, okay, this NFT stuff obviously is bad PR.
Ubisoft, I mean, just looks, I can't think of a company that looks fucking, I mean, well, Activision Blizzard, but outside of Activision Blizzard, it definitely goes, it's amazing that EA, to me, of the big
are
three,
clean.
Activision, no, they're not clean, I don't ever want to say that,
cleaner.
We don't know what's going on there, but like, Activision Blizzard is fucking miserable, Ubisoft is miserable for a lot of the same reasons, plus NFTs, so yeah.
They're 1A, 1B?
It's so
and
bad.
EA's just, and EA always has their trading card packs and stuff, but
they're bad, but I'm just saying,
but
like,
at least not NFTs.
They've managed, like, it's just with the way the shitstorm of news has come this past month for the big three video game companies, the big three third parties, EA is just like,
because EA's traditionally been voted like the worst company to work for online. You know, it's online polls, don't mean anything, but it won't be EA this year. That's for sure. They'll get a respite this year.
Yeah, no shit. So, yeah, that's that.
Ian, we have a Patreon, don't we?
Patreon.com/CU Podcast.
What do you do there, Ian?
Yo, you put some money in, you get some stuff out. You get a full video podcast, and you get a hangout once a month.
You get an exclusive podcast, and this time it's recorded on an iPhone because
our power was out and we were scrambling because I've got a job, Pat's got stuff.
I got to edit what you see right now.
Yep.
And upload it.
We both got a lot of stuff to do. We needed to make fast, quick moves. We also do these polls.
Do these polls in second place, you guys. It's now it's on purpose now. This is a mob. This is democracy has become a mob. Are SEAL gang collectors being mistreated? Only 40%. And in first place, worst 8-bit and 16-bit arcade ports on the tail end of our conversation last week on best 8-bit and 16-bit arcade ports. I have a feeling this will be a lot easier to come up with.
It is. And I've got two right off the top of the bat that I want to mention. One that's going to make you mad, but I'm going to bring it up all the same. But first of all, the first one that comes to mind for me, and it was really thrown into sharp relief after I was able to get the wonderful SNK 40th anniversary collection that our friends at, I believe, Digital Eclipse did. Akari Warriors.
Why would I be pissed by that?
No, that's not the one that I'm thinking.
The NES game is not good.
The NES game is in the arcade game is a shitload of fun. I fucking love the arcade game. It's so good. Okay. The NES game is slow. The characters move slow. There is far more bullets coming at you than you can really ever, like, figure out.
Well, you can't strafe in the NES game.
You can't strafe.
That's the biggest thing. Yeah. Even the sequel of the NES, they put in strafing.
Yeah. And it's just, it's impossible to aim. It's also just, like I said, not a very fun game. Repetitive. The levels seem a lot longer. I don't know if they stretch the levels out to increase the at-home play value. Game's basically unbeatable without the
ABBA.
ABBA.
Why do you think I would disagree with this?
This is not the one.
Okay.
This is not the one.
You're teasing me with this. Okay.
This is not the one. Okay. From what I read, reading about it actually through the great SNK 40th anniversary collection, is that they didn't get like any source code. They basically remade the game.
Micronix. They're the ones who did the port of it.
Yeah. They basically like just.
Wow. Okay.
It just from right. scratch. They just put it back together.
So Micronix gets a little semi-pass then.
Well, okay. Semi-pass. I mean, they did it. But it looks like
the game. Yeah. It has all the elements of the game in it.
Doesn't look nearly as nice.
I don't know why they had the circular. They still like said, okay, well, it's a rotary controller in the arcade. When you turn, it's not instant in the Cardboard Warriors. That's the biggest problem with that game. If they made it like Commando, it would be so much more playable.
Yes.
Where if I hit up and then right, it goes up and right. This game, it doesn't. You see the guy waddle and turn as if you're twisting the controller, the rotary controller in the arcade. It's insane. There's no other NES game, I think, like that, where to turn around, like, you have to see the guy turn around slowly, and like, so you won't shoot instantly in the directions. It's unplayable.
Yeah, it's not
a lot of it.
Not a good game.
I would love to see a no-death run of Ikari Warriors. I said I saw the Ninja Turtle ones a few weeks ago, the no-hit run. I want to see a no-death run of Ikari Warriors. I'd love to see it. Sorry.
I hate the Final Fight port on Super Nintendo. Hate it.
Is it the worst one?
I don't like it.
Is it the worst?
It's not good. And it was a game that I sold at Luna a lot that people would come back and exchange because they swore they remembered it being two players. And they're like, this is garbage. And they would bring it back.
This is my argument. Okay, so this is the problem with it. Obviously, it's not the complete game. They took out a level.
Took out a character, no two player, and 2 to 3 enemies on screen per time.
3 enemies max, so 4 characters on screen at the same time. There's limitations. Okay, it's an early Super Nintendo game. It's early. If it came out 3 years later, it would probably have been the arcade version, because Final Fight 2 and 3 are both great games.
Yes.
You know, so it's almost like it was a victim of its own circumstance of when it came out. I'm shocked they didn't do like a re-release for a game like that. I would have bought if I didn't buy it as a kid because my friend Joey had it, and I didn't like the fact that my favorite player wasn't in it and it didn't have two players. I didn't think it was a horrible game. It was still amazing to see it as an 11-year-old on the Super Nintendo. It was still amazing.
As a purely graphics piece, it's nice to see, especially at the start of the Super Nintendo, that yes, this is achievable, but it really ends up, to me, it feels like a tech demo. It does not feel like a game.
It's a game which just isn't the one you like. I understand that. It wasn't the one I played at Ground Round.
Yes.
One of the first 50 Cent games I ever saw.
It was disappointing when my friend down the street ended up getting it, and I went over there, and I'm like, I don't even want to look at this.
I just think it's stupid that when they came out with the Final Fight guy, they still didn't have three players in it. They had to take out Cody for it. It's like, you couldn't put in more memory, and they didn't.
Well, I think that's the big issue. The Final Fight guy thing pisses me off because I don't know when that came out, but
94, I think. It was a few years later, I believe.
I feel like they could have had all three
Final
in there.
Fight guy. I think it was a few years later. It wasn't right away.
Sure. Yeah, I'm fairly certain it was a few years later. And so if that's the case, I feel like at that point, the tech would have probably advanced to the point where they might have been able to do that. I don't know.
I only got Final Fight guy. I don't think it was. Okay, it came out in Japan a lot sooner. That's why. It came out in Japan in 92.
Okay.
So
maybe that's why. So maybe they still hadn't figured it out.
I thought
yet.
It was way after that for the Super Nintendo.
No, for the longest time, I thought
it's almost like I don't have a book behind me to tell me, but it's all with Pac-Man's on top of them. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'll look at my Moby games before a fucking Atari shuts it down. All right, any other ones in the top of your head? I can just run through any.
Go through. Obviously, there's tons on the NES. Those are the two that I wanted to bring up.
Another Micronix. Micronix. Like Ghosts and Goblins is miserable.
Yeah, it's.
And it's not like the arcade game is easy as a cakewalk, but like the NES game is miserable.
The flickering, all that stuff in the Micronix port of it makes it even harder. But I've beaten loop one of that. I've never beaten loop two. But yeah, it's not.
You beat it on the NES?
Loop one.
Okay.
The game takes you have to beat it twice. I can't do that.
I'm just surprised you're
back in the day I played games a lot more and was,
you're not a twitchy player. That's like
a little bit better.
I think I can get to the third stage.
No, it was like Contra. You play it, I mean, it's not as uniform as Contra, but any game you play enough, you'll start to, you know, figure out a pattern. I couldn't fucking do it today. I couldn't make it past the third level today, probably.
I was gonna say I was disappointed. I was probably too harsh on it. Operation Wolf on the NES. It's a strange.
You can't do it.
You can the control. You can't do it with a zapper because the zapper's not. It's one clicks and you go nuts doing it. With the controller, it's not bad. You just can't do that game. It's. I shouldn't be harsh on it. It's impressive for what it is on the NES. Operation Wolf. It could be a lot worse.
It could, but my thing with this is where you want to give them credit where it's due, and I get it. It's just a game that should not have been ported because it doesn't play properly.
Yeah, that's true. That's true when it comes to that.
Like, they did their best, but their best is still not fun.
Is Final Fight Guy not on Mobi games? I can't find it for some reason. I just see Final Fight. Oh, it's going to be on your Final Fight. Okay, I'll look under there. How about we go to that? Any on the Genesis that you're just like, this is just miserable to play this? Okay, I got one. In the Genesis, it's actually decent. On the Super Nintendo, it's one of the worst games on the console. Pit Fighter. I know you don't like the arcade game. I enjoy.
I don't think it's good in any way, shape, or form. So yeah,
Pit Fighter to me, we always disagreed on this. Pit Fighter is a fun arcade game. It did well in the arcades. People liked it when it came out. And back in, was it 92? The Super Nintendo port on that game is almost like they had a week to do it. It feels like they had a week and a half to throw something together. It's that fucking bad. And even the Genesis one is resembles the arcade. The Super Nintendo one doesn't resemble the arcade at all. It's a horrifying game. I can't believe it. It's one of the only half star games in the Super Nintendo library that I get. Like, it's miserable, that fucking game.
If you want another not great port that kind of falls,
this isn't not great. This was miserable.
Yeah. It's not. It's one of those where it's like admirable that you tried, but you just shouldn't have. Street Fighter Alpha 2 on the Super Nintendo.
I'm not familiar with that one.
It just
can't get the job done.
Yeah, it's not, you can't do it.
It's with the extra chip stuff?
Yeah, it's a remarkable effort, but it's not there. It's not there. So,
all right,
those are the ones that, yeah, obviously there's more.
Mortal Kombat on the Super Nintendo. We'll say it was super.
Miserable. Also, not great on the NES, or on the Genesis in retrospect, but very small sprites.
Okay. I didn't give it a half star review. I think I gave it a star and a half or two in the Super Nintendo because for what's there, the graphics are fine. The problem with that game, not even the fatalities, get the fatalities and blood out of it. It controls clunky.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't get the controls right for some reason.
No, Mortal Kombat is a game that feels snappy and fast, and it does not feel snappy and fast on the Super.
It's hard. It shouldn't be hard for me to do Scorpion's move. You know what I mean? I played in the arcade. Like, it's easier to do it on a joystick in the arcade than it is on the NES Super Nintendo pad. That doesn't make any sense, but that's the truth. And so they just did a bad job with it. And people talk about the fatalities. I don't even care about that. I want a game I can play well, and it doesn't play well outside of it. And the Genesis one plays a lot better.
Doesn't look great, but it plays fine. Has the blood. Yeah, it's certainly a better port.
And what we didn't bring, which is amazing, because we didn't bring up one of the best ports ever, was Mortal Kombat 2 on the Super Nintendo. It was amazing.
It's good on the Genesis, too. They did a good job on both
systems
with that.
In comparison, it's amazing. Yeah. Like, when that came out, we're like, holy shit, this is the arcade game. We're not fucking around with the original anymore.
Now, for the time, the Mortal Kombat 2 arcade port was impressive to see.
Oh, my God. Graphically, everything. The way they packed everything in there. All right. Okay, I'm not as familiar with the Genesis as you.
Oh, I've got one that I want to bring up, and this is the last one I want to bring up. Burger Time on the NES is fucking dog shit.
Thank you for admitting it, Ian. Because whenever we play it every year, I'm like, this is not fun, this is not good.
I love Burger Time, but like, I actually sat there and played the arcade version next to the NES version. I was like, okay, never mind, this game sucks.
It's just a weird, weird version
of it. It doesn't feel right. It feels 100%
controls
wrong.
Off.
It just feels weird.
I'm not a big Burger Time guy. I didn't bring up that. I should have brought up last week that Paperboy is a really good port of the arcade game on the NES.
Sure is.
The colors are muted, but like, it has the elements you want in that game there. Like I said, I can go through more NES ones, but that's almost like it's low hanging fruit because it's the NES. I mean, it's like almost talking about bad Atari arcade ports.
Right.
It'd be like a bunch of them couldn't get the job done. Well, a little bit simpler times there.
Well, I mean, you'll notice I'm showing some leeway. Like, one that I personally don't like at all. I don't like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 arcade port.
I was going to say that, Ian.
I don't like it.
I was
going
to say that.
Lots of people do.
Oh, my God. That's what I was going to say.
I hate it.
I was going to say that. How do I always forget that?
It feels stiff. I don't like the extra levels at all. You did not need to add anything extra to that game.
This is like I should think about Final Fight on Super Nintendo, but I give Final Fight more leeway because the fact that that game doesn't feel at all like the arcade game. I don't care that it controls horribly.
It does
compared to the arcade.
And it wasn't until maybe 10 years ago that I really realized it, because I got really into the Turtles arcade game again. I started emulating it and playing it a lot. And then when we started doing the
marathons,
when we started doing the marathons, I started playing it more. I'm like, this is it was amazing the graphics they got out of it.
That's what kids like.
It does not play well.
No, this is why. Because in that game, it's one hit at a time and pause. Like, you can hit him. If you swing again, it won't hit
him.
There's no combos. Every other fighting game on the NES has fucking beat 'em ups have combos. Double Dragon did it well. I'm not saying it had to be so smooth and you throw the guy at the arcade with your weapons. I get that. That would have been hard to pull off. It's clunky. It's not fun. If you go from the arcade to the port, you'll get your ass kicked. You have to, like, relearn how to play. I shouldn't have to relearn how to play a beat-em-up
and
to play the game.
Like I said, and I'm one of the people who does this.
Double Dragon's a better port, and that's not a great port on the NES to me.
I like it better than the arcade version.
Oh, my God. Okay. Back to what we agree on.
what was I going to say? Ninja
Turtles, clunky, throws, beat-em-up.
No,
Raphael loves you.
Oh, stop. Games don't need extra filler. More often than not, when arcade ports or video games get extra stuff added, it feels rushed and it feels stupid. And Turtles has a couple of added levels that suck.
So I never even played the game into it that far because I never liked it.
I think it's got an added, like, hoverboard-like segment. And then there's, like, something else that's supposedly not in the actual arcade game.
The dojo scene? Was that in the 3? No, it's the dojo scene.
I can't remember. But anyways,
there's a couple extra
TMNT 2 on the NES, not great.
It's good for an NES game, not as an arcade port.
It's a bad port.
That's the thing. Good for an NES game, bad port. Worst port, well, Nothing as bad as Pit Fighter. That still ranks as, like, one of the worst games ever in the 16-bit era for the Super Nintendo.
All right.
Ian, we got voicemails. We do.
Well, why don't you tell me a little bit about those, Patrick?
Well, you can go to anchor.fm/ICU podcast, and you could leave us a short voicemail. Hopefully you like us. And, wow, we're making time, even though we were delayed by 45 minutes or so. Here's our first one.
Hey guys, my name's Richard. I've been listening to you since about 2013. My completely unnecessary question for you is, what would you think about a movie, one could say a biography, of the great Tommy Tallarico, his life, his goals, his accomplishments?
All right, what do you think, Ian? Well, here's the thing. No. We know all his accomplishments because his website is just a fucking list of all his accomplishments.
That's right.
All his Guinness World Records, all the awards he got from the company he helped, you know, found, you know, his they're all there, so you don't have to.
I would not watch a movie about his life. It would really depend on the slant and angle that it took.
Sure. Oh, yes, we could. We might watch a movie one day. I have a feeling about some of it. I have a feeling that we might watch some movie one day. Okay, next one.
What would you do for a flying car?
What would you do for a flying car, Ian?
Not much. I don't drive.
You wouldn't drive a flying car?
No, probably not. I'd be more terrified for that. But if other people wanted a flying car, like, say, my wife, it would depend. I'd do a lot. I'd do a lot for her.
Whoops, I dragged this on OBS, so we went off screen for a second there.
Oh, well.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. It's Voxandra.
Oh, it is.
Jersey here. Now, I've been watching you guys for a long time now, from before when Ian couldn't be on the show for a while. Thank you, by the way, for getting better and saving Pat from looking like a lost puppy doing a one-man show on the boardwalk. You know, it's been a long time since I've been to any boardwalk down the shore here, and I'll tell you, the only tram car I'm watching out for is the caboose of the lady I'm in the DMs of.
Oh!
I'm getting off topic here. The point is, I've been listening a long time, and I kind of realized something recently. Was the Intellivision Amico always as much of a dumpster fire? Or did it start off interesting and just get worse over time? It's been so long, I honestly forgot if Tommy Tellis some BS was spewing it from day one. Freaking NFTs on a console. Guess that's what we need. To burn down an entire forest just so some douchebag number can confirm my number's next in line. Or at least I think that's how it works. Listen, there's only one NFT I care about. Some nice freaking tip.
Oh, Vox. A little saucy there, Voxandra.
Always nice to hear from you, Voxy.
Very saucy.
To answer the question, though.
Did it start interesting? No, we were intrigued at first.
It was. It did not start as a tire fire. I did not have high hopes for it at first.
No.
But I said, and I will admit I said it because people could go back. I felt like if there was a person who could at the time, because I did not know more, that it was probably Tommy Tallarico. Well, he has proven that has been not true. What happened was we did our initial thing. We got
initial first few videos about it.
We did, and we were we hedged our bets. We held back. We were like maybe, but we got the price wrong, and he was not happy that we weren't 100%
on board.
That was what started with. That's what happened. Tommy cannot, especially then. He's gotten a little bit better at it because otherwise he's going to get no positives directed to him.
I think they're telling him to shut up at this point.
But If you were 100% on board with the Amico early on, he would get in your email box, which he did to me, and try to get an interview.
He did that with a lot of YouTubers.
And after scheduling an interview with me twice, and no show, I don't bring this up a lot, he scheduled one, said, I need to reschedule. I said, okay, we can do this date. I said, hey, Tommy, I need to reschedule this date. He said, we can do this date. He said, I can't do this date. Get at me to reschedule. And I said, fuck off. I'm not playing this game anymore. I don't need to know about the Intellivision Amico that bad. This is funny because I see someone out there every once in a while in the comments for the Amico shit be like, oh, Tommy snubbed them. No, Tommy was fucking begging to get in my pants.
I don't think he directly asked me for an interview. I wonder how that would have went down. Would you have done it from your house and just
no? It was him? It was basically I was going to talk to him and I was because I talked to you about it. I was like, look, Tommy.
I don't remember it
because it was literally at
3 years
beginning.
Ago.
Tommy was like, hey, these things aren't so right. And he came at me with like, yeah, you want to get some insider info? And I was like, not really. And then I told you and you're like, well, it might be interesting, but just be aware that he's going to, you know, shill. I'm like, oh, of course he's going to just fucking do the dog and pony show. And I tried to hear what he said. And I'm not going to chase after an advertisement.
How do you think it would have went if it actually happened? Would you have like pressed him on stuff or just been like, okay.
It was too early. I would have.
That sounds like crazy puffery at this point that. We'll see what happens.
No, that's what it was so early on that I would have expected puffery that you and I would have probably been like, probably
he
not.
He would have pulled out the Burger Time thing. Remember when Burger Time was supposed to be on this console as an early title, all the data east?
Remember when this wasn't a console for kids and old people? It was a console that was going to have data east games and Jalico games. Yeah. And they got a new R-Type coming.
A super 2D chip. The best 2D chip ever. The best 2D graphics you've ever seen.
Why are you riling me up, Voxandra?
I got a payer for that to do that. I like eating like this.
I'm all red and sweaty.
What is up, Pat and Ian? This is Anthony, a.k.a. AP Greenness from Central Pennsylvania. And no, I do not have a Friendly's nearby, and I've never been there, so I can't rub it in Pat's face. But I'll try to keep my time limited.
Don't rub things in my face.
I met you, Pat, at Too Many Games in 2019. And if you figure out who I was, I kept bringing up Ian's fascinating adventures at Luna and questioning his sanity. Which, Ian, how did you keep your sanity while working there? As I work retail now, and I want to know ways to deal with the stress and anger that it entails. Speaking as a fan, though, what are you guys' biggest pet peeves when it comes to fans meeting you? What do fans do to just get on your nerves? Which I hope I didn't do at Too Many Games. And hey, Tommy, if you're listening to this, I'm a small content creator, so if you want more press about your love child of the future, I only got 795 subscribers, so come at me.
What
don't even think about trying to offer me a car ride. I'm too smart for that, as I drive a fucking smart car. So let me know what you got.
Okay, Anthony. The cadence. We're getting worn out from the cadence.
How did I not go insane? Fatty foods, a cigarette every 2 weeks, more booze than I should have drank, and a lot of marijuana. I don't recommend any of those methods. Don't do retail.
Ian smokes to get over me sometimes.
Hey, Panian. This is Mike from California.
Mike!
A friend of mine had asked me if I had ever played this NES game, and I told him no, because it was rare and kind of expensive. And he told me, well, it's too bad because it's a really good game. So that got me kind of wondering, what would you say is a game out there or even games that you wish weren't rare or expensive so that more people could enjoy it?
What game?
This could be NES or it could be any system. I was just curious to get your general thoughts.
Any of them.
But they did not specify what game it was that they were talking about.
No, I'm curious.
Anyway, for me, my answer is actually, when it comes to the really rare games that I think are fun to play, I actually think Little Samson's a lot of fun. I think it's a good game. I wish it wasn't as expensive as it was.
All those IRM games.
That's not IRM, that's Taito.
That's what I'm sorry. I've been all the titles.
I don't like the Flintstones game. I don't like Dinosaur Peak. And honestly, I've tried. I get why people like Panic Restaurant, but too many of the weapons feel kind of useless for me to really like Panic Restaurant.
Ooh, I love Panic Restaurant.
I love the way it looks. I love the idea. Obviously, I love the theme. I just don't like playing the game.
You don't like the plates?
I don't like playing the game.
They're all bangers, all those late title ones. It's almost like, God, those Panic Restaurant and the Super Nintendo would have been amazing. If they'd done some of those.
Sure.
Because they didn't sell a lot on the NES at that point. It was like 93.
Well, that's why they're so rare. Yes. But of those, I do really like Little Samson.
And that's the one I probably the least amount of experience with out of all of them.
I like it. Funny.
Jetsons, I have more experience. I beat Jetsons. I reviewed that one. I didn't review Little Samson for the book. All right. Next one.
Pat, Ian, this is Matt from Rochester, New York again.
Okay.
Pat, just with those cookies from Wegmans. What were you thinking, man? It's been 2 years.
Yeah, I know.
Know if something was bad. Not even regular Oreos would last that long. Ian can confirm the Wegmans Oreos. They're not that bad, but they're not going to last two years. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
It's true. You should not be eating two-year-old cookies, Patrick.
Matthew and Ian, it's a narrative fiction. It was a character eating those cookies.
That's what you said.
Buenos Aires, Uncle Pat and Uncle Ian.
Uh-huh.
It's J-Bo back here again.
It is.
It's been a minute, lads. Just a quick one. So, I was thinking about it the other day, my favorite console, the Game Gear. Yeah, I said it. The Game Gear. okay. Favorite game on it, probably The Lion King for me, you know. The movement, the aesthetics, the way it looks, the cartoony graphics. I must say, perfect. What would be the best game on the Game Gear for you fellas? And
the best game you game for you.
Love your voice, J-Bo.
Very soothing.
It is. I have not played a lot of Game Gear, and I hope to play more, but I was having fun with Psychic World the other night.
I'm familiar.
It's like a little Mega Man-y type game.
Okay.
Sega made it. I like it.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking for a better Sega Mega Man game, I guess. Next one.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Brian from Northern Utah. Colin with just a quick question for you. UN Squadron might be one of the best games ever made. If you don't think so, you might be wrong. I'm too poor to buy the book, but my name should be in the book.
Oh, thank you.
Anyway, I just need to know what your rating is of UN Squadron, because it's amazing.
Okay.
Anyway, hope you guys have a good day.
Since you're in the book.
Since you contributed, I believe I gave it 4.5 stars.
It's a good game. It's a great game.
Which is excellent review. It's not 5, but it's I think a couple minor quibbles, but it's a great game. It's a great game. A couple more here. This is a very Amico heavy one, but it's just the way it's worked out.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Greg calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. If Tommy Tallarico came to you with an unlimited budget, what would you guys do to fix the Amico and its terrible launch? Thanks. Love the podcast.
Well, here's the thing.
I'd fucking scrap it and restart.
Well, here's the thing, though. You don't need an unlimited budget. The money's what gets you into trouble. You don't need all the fucking hardware. You don't need a console. This is how you do the Amico. Ready? This could have been its own topic. It might still be at some point. This is how you do it. You sell it. You do like the Wii Play design. If you really are in love with that fucking controller, you bundle the controller by itself with, like, I don't know, 15 fucking games. Yeah. That are basically tech demos anyway. That fucking Battle Tank game is like a tech demo, which is, it's like one of the games in the Wii Play. That's how you do it. If you become a publisher, you become a game publisher on various platforms. And if you want to do, you do the games by themselves. But then if you want to push your fucking iPad/ Intellivision controller, you bundle it separately. So you don't lock people into that thing. That's how you do it.
Another thing that I've seen going around that makes sense is, jumping out of the gate with a console
is insane.
Insane. You should have spent 2 to 3 years at least releasing new games by Intellivision, because I don't know if you've seen this. Intellivision has no third-party companies. Tommy said that recently. They have no third-party companies. Everything is
second party.
It's 1.5 party. Oh, he said, okay. Because he's always got to make up a new fucking term.
Does that mean that the folks doing Breakout said fuck you and we're not coming out anymore?
Yeah, probably. Because that was clear third party. Yeah,
Other Ocean stuff was going to be third party.
Yeah, that would have been clear third party too. So, well, he said what that means is they provide the graphics and the money and the and some sound effects, and that makes it 1.5 party. But I don't think that's actually really happened anywhere. That's just Tommy talking. But what you do is you bring out Intellivision as a game publisher, like you said, and you can even because they can't seem to get this figured out, a publisher development house sort of thing. You develop these games and you release these games for as cheap as you promised on consoles like the Switch, the PS4, the Xbox. You see if these games garner good reviews. You let people see if Intellivision is a company that is something to back. Then and only then, you come out and you go, hey, we're going to try a console. And you know what? It still would have fucking failed because no one's going to be like, oh, I need to buy a whole console to play these games. But that would have been the better way to do it.
Sure. The problem is, as we said before, no one's going to want these games without a console. Like, that's the thing. It's like, if these games existed on their own without a console, they'd be lost to time. Right.
People, that's the problem. And that's what's been going on as we watch this. Yeah. People are bending themselves into pretzels to get excited over games that if they saw them on the eShop, they would not spend more than 2 seconds looking at.
And $1.50.
Astro Smash is the best looking game and the most farthest along of all of them. But if Astro Smash released 2 weeks ago on the eShop, none of these people would be covering it. There'd be no fanfare, nothing. It's only because it's all you have to look forward to.
On a console, you're trapped into an ecosystem with these awful controllers. Like we said from the beginning, the money in this venture is not in the games. It's in selling the hardware. It's the opposite of every other video game console that has pretty much existed.
It's the only unique thing Tommy's really done. And you know what? It's the fucking stupidest idea I've ever heard.
It's the death knell of this console.
Yes.
So, all right, you want to do one more? Or you want to check in with a friend here?
Let's check in with a friend.
It's only 1:05. Wow, we caught up. We somehow caught up in time. Somehow.
We did okay.
We got through this. My couch outside got soaked, but we're
how long? 8 years? 7 years? Professionals.
8.5 years almost.
Fucking Christ.
I know.
All right.
We got one more.
Hey, true believers. Welcome to life in a post-Atari age world. But don't worry, we're going to get through this. We still got the Amico MySpace page going strong. That guy Tom is still our friend on there, you know, the founder of MySpace, Tom, so we got a partnership with him still. And of course, as soon as the page loads up, you get your world rocked with some tubular tunes by yours truly. But we still got other ways to promote, like the new Amico Digest magazine, for instance. Yeah, tons of articles about the Amico and the AC adapter and me, lots of stuff about me. Not to mention it's in full color. Boom! And it's now available anywhere magazines are sold in West Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Yeah, but good riddance to all those Atari age dinglings, especially Albert, who's just an untalented, jealous gatekeeping. I don't have to deal with any of that on the forums at AOL, see? That is the sound of being free from dingling. I feel so alive!
Well, all right. Dial-up is about when the Intellivision technology, you know.
You think they've got a space on Prodigy?
Prodigy space?
Yeah, maybe CompuServe.
CompuServe. My friend had, I think, Prodigy.
I'm trying to remember Kevin. All the early, like, Prodigy, CompuServe, Delphi, CompuServe. Yeah.
Prodigy,
AOL.
Those were the three big ones besides that. Well, Tommy, best of luck on MySpace. Maybe you get that partnership with Tom. Tom and Tommy.
Tom and Tommy.
All right, that's it for this podcast. I don't know how we got through this.
I don't know, but we did.
I almost feel like I got to skip lunch in order to catch up on time and just go right into editing. I almost feel like I have to.
Yeah, it's my day. I feel like. I mean, it's fine. We're good.
We had a good time. If you want to see us talk in my den about Heat and Michael Mann movies, go to patreon.com/CUpodcast.
Great movie. Watch it.
And yeah, and I like how the lights almost went off again.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, it got
shaky.
Right,
that was like me. Like, let's wrap it up.
We wrapped it up. We had a little brownout during the almost a brownout during the voicemails, but we got through it. All right, we'll see you later.
Bye-bye.